privileged to have Brian Sanders with us. He serves as Executive Vice President of Positive Alternative Radio based in Blacksburg, Virginia. PAR is a nonprofit ministry operating stations and networks in key markets in Virginia, Eastern Tennessee, West Virginia, Ohio, North Carolina, and South Carolina, including Spirit FM. The stations provide adult contemporary and gospel music, as well as Christian content available across a variety of digital platforms, such as the Encouraging Radio app, which I know that they would love for all of us to download and to follow their music there. Brian's passion for leadership has driven him to read, research, and learn from some of the greatest leaders in history. His blogs, video clips, and posts to social media have attracted thousands of followers. His first book, Leadership Endurance, was released June 11, 2019, and later that week hit Amazon's number one bestsellers list for Christian leadership. The book's proceeds benefit PAR. Brian makes his home in the New River Valley of Virginia and is with his loving wife, Kayla. So please join me in welcoming Brian Sanders.
Thank you. Thank you, Stuart. Thank you so much. This morning, we were able to take a few moments and to drive over to where the old England Air Force Base used to be. That was my dad's last station when he was in the Air Force, and we lived at 4008 Schilling Drive. Let's see here. I went to the sixth grade. I went to school on the base. Seventh grade, I went to Alexandria Junior High School. My wife went to Brame Junior High. Yes, she did. She also went to Alexandria Senior High. We never knew each other while we were here in Louisiana. She is from England. I am from, Dad was in the Air Force 20 years, throw a dart at a map, I'm from there. So we were able to meet. So thank you so much for having us today. Thinking about just driving around here, flood of memories driving around here today, and just being reminded of all the lessons that I learned. And there's so many leaders in this room. ABC station showed up beforehand, unannounced. That's always good, especially with a guy with no hair, no makeup, and everything else, and bright lights. And as my dad used to say, just all forehead, son. That's all it is, all forehead. You know, and there's just times when you want to quit, times when you want to give up. And I'm sure you've never been there. You have never, ever been there that you wanted to give up, that you wanted to just throw in the towel. Well, my goal today is to encourage you. Can we turn me down just a little bit? Because listen, I'm aggravating myself. And if I'm aggravating myself, I know I'm aggravating everybody else. All right. So let's get started, why don't we? It's 1862 in Washington, D.C. In an upstairs bedroom of the White House, 11-year-old Willie Lincoln is dying, the son of Abraham and Mary Todd. The White House had just gotten running water. It had just gotten running plumbing. And to the genius of those who were in Washington, D.C., they ran the water from the Potomac River to the White House. But the Union troops were using the Potomac River as a latrine. And Willie Lincoln drank that water. And it gave him typhoid fever. Across the hall, Willie Lincoln is dying in this bedroom. The president goes in and checks on him. Mr. Lincoln would have to walk across the hallway. And in this bedroom is his wife, Mary Todd. And she is screaming the rafters down. She was famous for that. She was famous for being mean. She was famous for being loud. She was famous for being very unstable. History tells us you could hear her throughout the entire mansion screaming at him, berating him, telling him what a horrible husband that he was. And as she screamed at him, she said, "Lincoln, our boy would not be dying if you wouldn't be having this war." So I want you to, and then, so Lincoln is looking, you know, he's going from this bedroom where his son is dying to this bedroom where his wife is just coming undone. And in between this bedroom and that bedroom, there's a picture window. And he stops to look out the picture window. When he looks out that picture window, he sees the Potomac River and over 10,000 Union troops. A reminder to him that there's a war being prosecuted because of decisions that he has made, that he wants to keep the Union, an actual Union, and he wants to set a people free. So let me set the stage here for you first. This bedroom, what's happening? His son is dying. He walks out of that bedroom and he comes out and he looks out this window. He's reminded of a war, that there are fathers and sons, nephews dying because of decisions he's made. In this bedroom, his wife is dying. So in order to get some respite, in order to get some rest, he goes downstairs. The downstairs hallway, anybody in 1862 could walk in the White House. In 1862, anybody could walk up that driveway and just walk in. Note, you can't do that today. Okay, just make a note of that. There were so many people in the downstairs hallway of the White House begging for favors. They were wanting pardons for fathers and sons who had left the army. They'd gone AWOL, and they were scheduled to be executed. They were begging for pardons. They were begging for federal jobs. They were begging for land grants. They were begging for all these different things. That the bottom hallway of the White House was called the Beggar's Opera. The president leaves upstairs, walks downstairs, trying to get a little bit of rest. As he walks this downstairs hallway, hundreds of people start grabbing his arm. Sir, why are you prosecuting a war? You're putting my son at risk. And he takes a step. Sir, I need a land grant settled. And he takes another step. Sir, would you please just drop the war and make peace with the South? And he keeps walking. Sir, you're an idiot. I don't know why we ever elected you. And he keeps going and he keeps going. I mean, and finally he gets to a room and he says, in there. So he opens up the door and in there is his cabinet. Seward, Baker, Stanton. He walks in there and he shuts the door. As soon as he walks in there, sir, we have to send troops to Fredericksburg. Sir, how will we pay for this war? Sir, we have a peace offer from the South. Upstairs, a son is dying. In this window is a reminder of a war. In this bedroom, his wife is having a meltdown. In this hallway, as he walks down the hallway, are hundreds of people asking him for favors, trying to get him to do something for them. And he walks in this room, and people are wanting him to make decisions. No matter where he turns, somebody wants a piece of him. Wherever he turns, there is a problem. Stop. You ever felt like that? You ever been there? That no matter where you turn, there is a problem. No matter where you turn, there is an issue. No matter where you turn, there is no peace. You ever been there? Yes, you have. Some of you, I mean, this is a Baptist church. I could say, raise your hand, you know, just close your eyes. Yes, you could testify to that, that you have been there. And it makes you want to quit because the temptation of temporary peace is so great that it might want to stop you from actually accomplishing what you were built to do. That's a damaging place to be. Horrible place to be. How did Lincoln do it? I mean, how did he carry on? I mean, what a horrible, horrible day. What a horrible season. How did this man do it? How did he keep on going? I want to give you four short steps, four short things that I think he did, and you can read them in the book as well. First of all, If you want to endure, if you want to keep going, you must release yourself from the burden that you have to be perfect in order to have an impact. Let me say that again. If you want to endure, release yourself from the burden that you have to be perfect in order to have an impact. I never in my wildest dreams ever thought I would stand on the stage and talk to people. Let me tell you a few things. I am riddled with insecurities. This is about to get real, and some of you are about to get very uncomfortable. The door is right there. I have a speech impediment. I stutter. I stammer. God made me in charge of one of the largest radio groups in America. Isn't that hysterical? I went to speech therapy for 12 years, two of those years right here. And this is what they taught me. Mr. Sanders, back then it was Brian. I mean, 10 years old. You know, Brian, if you don't want to stutter, you could do this. Whenever you talk to people, you could just stand up there and you could do this with your finger, make a square, and when you do that, you will never stutter. Well, in my opinion, that's kind of weird and awkward for somebody to stand up here and do this all the time. Don't you think so? I mean, I just think that that's kind of weird. So I don't do that because I don't want to be weird. All right. Secondly, they said talk in an accent. My wife is from England. So I'm like, can we have second breakfast? Can we visit Shetland? My wife looks at me and says, the Queen is not amused. But if you talk in an accent, you will never stutter because it's forcing your brain to think about what you're actually saying. Well, I can't do that because it makes me look weird and stupid. So this is just me. So when I'm up here talking to y'all, I'm fighting every insecurity known to man, hoping I don't have to say certain words like the last book of the Bible, which is what? Yeah, y'all know your Bible because your pastor's back there. So I will never say that word unless I do this, Revelation, because I have trouble with that particular word. Secondly, I am grossly overweight. In the last 8 months, I've hired a private trainer. I've lost 80 pounds. Do not clap, because there is fried chicken sitting right there. And I have seen myself do this time and time before. And it smells like manna from heaven. It's my personal opinion that the word manna means fried chicken. That's why they wandered for 40 years. I would have wandered for 60. It'd been fine with me. And so it exposes every insecurity I have. The reason being, whenever I come back from behind that pillar, are they going to listen to me? Or are they going to get stuck on this fact? Listen, if he wants to be a leader, let him lose the weight. Oh, honey, I'm trying, but I'm failing. I'm fine. I'm back up and down again. And Lincoln had insecurities. Did you know that they had to hide scissors and knives from Lincoln to keep him from killing himself? Release yourself of the burden that you have to be perfect in order to have an impact. The four men on the cover of your book, Ulysses S. Grant, was an alcoholic, had to resign from the army because of his alcoholism. He went and got dry. Re-enlisted with his best friend who agreed to be his accountability partner and helped keep him dry. But he never shook this whole label of being a drunk. His wife's father wrote him a letter almost monthly saying, I wish my daughter would actually leave you because you're nothing more than a drunk. There's a good Christmas. Happy Thanksgiving. Wouldn't you like to have that? And yet, what did Grant do? He won the war and he became president of the United States. You don't have to be perfect to have an impact. FDR lost use of his legs at age 39. He got polio. I don't care what you think about his politics. I don't care. But he got polio, lost use of his legs. He couldn't walk. If I were to lose my legs and could not walk, I'd be done. I think life is over. He became Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Navy, Governor of New York, became President four times from a wheelchair. What's my excuse? Churchill had a skin disease. He had to wear pink silk. I bet you didn't know that about him, did you? Hitler would send him messages making fun of him. You have to wear pink silk. Churchill had the last laugh. Can you imagine being Prime Minister of England and you're having to wear pink silk because of a skin sensitivity? These men all had insecurities. None of them were perfect, but yet they changed the world. Ladies and gentlemen here today, release yourself of the burden that you have to be perfect in order to have an impact. There was only one perfect person that ever walked this earth, and he came to rescue the rest of us who were imperfect. And ever since then, the only type of people God has ever used are imperfect people. Second, your passion for your purpose must be greater than the fears that your insecurities create. I'm going to say that again because I wrote it and I think it's pretty good. Passion for your purpose must be greater than the fears that your insecurities create. If you're a pastor, your worst day of the week is Monday because you wake up full of insecurities. Did I preach right yesterday? Why didn't this person shake my hand? Why didn't that person come to church? Nobody walked the aisle this week. You're riddled with insecurities. Why isn't God blessing my church like he's blessing that church? What if you're a business leader? What if you own a business? Sales are up this month. Sales are down this month. I wonder why this employee isn't doing this. I wonder why that employee isn't doing that. Riddled with insecurities. And always at night when you lay down, you're worried about what you're doing wrong, not what they're doing wrong. And your insecurities paralyze you. You work in the government. There's a great job. And you want to make this place better for people. But there are two things true that if you work in accounting or if you work in government, is that the only time you hear from people is when something goes wrong. You never hear from people whenever something goes right. But that's a worthy calling because you're making people's lives better. So how do you get past your insecurities? How do I get past the fact that I'm a very large man and I have this horrible speech impediment that just scares me to death? Well, my passion for my purpose is greater than the insecurities that my fears create. In other words, I want to come here today and tell you that God built you to do what you're doing. Step into that. Take some steps forward. Have a big enough dream. You're like, well, my dream doesn't really move me. Well, get a bigger one. This ain't rocket surgery. Some of you will catch that joke on the way home. Yeah, he went to a Louisiana school. He said rocket surgery. That's what he did. It ain't brain science. See what I did there? Get a bigger dream. Get a dream that's so big that it'll inspire you. It'll pull you forward through every single insecurity. How did Grant get through that, being told everywhere he went, you're just a drunk, you'll never amount to nothing? What was his passion? I got to win the war. How did Lincoln get through this with debilitating migraines? He would actually lay in bed. They'd put a, is everybody done eating? They'd put a bucket beside his bed because his migraines were so horrible that he would upchuck. And his cabinet would meet around him. Now listen. That's dedication, because I ain't meeting with nobody who's in the bed with a bucket. God bless you. I'll pray for you from the other side of the door. But you got to have a vision that's big. You got to have a vision that draws you that much. My question then for you is this. Is the passion for your purpose greater than the fears that your insecurities create? Third step, If you want to endure, decide today that when you fall down, you'll get back up again. Next slide. This is Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Next slide as well, John. If you'll look right here, you'll see he's wearing braces. This is his son, James. I told you that at age 39, he lost use of his legs. He wore metal braces that started here at his waist. It would take an hour to dress the president every single morning. They'd put metal braces around his waist. They'd go all the way down to his legs, and they would wrap around and come up, and he'd lock his knees in place. He could not walk. So his son James would lock arms with him, and they had a code. And that code was James Cain leg, James Cain leg, James Cain leg. So what would happen is that Roosevelt's son would take a step, James. Roosevelt would take his cane and this leg and do what? Cane. Boom. Then, what's the last word? Leg. Roosevelt would move this leg. Boom. That was their code. James, boom, cane, boom, leg, boom. Roosevelt couldn't walk. He was actually lunging his body forward. And he used James to actually balance himself like this. And so you would see him do like this. And he'd have a cane and he'd just smile at you as he came along like that in excruciating pain. Every time he got done walking, his entire suit would be drenched. He'd be in that much pain and that much effort. Well, before he was president, he was governor of New York. His office was in the Securities and Exchange Building. One particular day, he was very arrogant. He got out of the car. He looked at his aides and says, "I'm going to walk to my office." "Governor, no, sir, you can't do that. I'm the governor. I can do whatever I want." "Sir, we beg you, please don't walk to your office." "I am going to walk." Roosevelt, they get him out of the car. They help him up the steps. He walks through the doors with his cane. Roosevelt forgot something. These braces are metal, and the floor of the Security Exchange Building was made out of marble. What do you think happened when Roosevelt's braces hit that marble floor? Went right out from under him. The governor landed flat of his back. Hundreds of people rushed around him. "Governor, are you okay? Governor, are you okay? Governor, are you okay?" He starts screaming back, "Get away from me! Get away from me!" Somehow or another, Roosevelt went from arrogant to where he was humbled all of a sudden to now he's finding some grit. Takes me a little longer to learn that lesson, but for him, it's pretty quick. He keeps saying, "Get away from me, get away from me, get away from me." He takes his cane, plants it on the marble floor, rights himself up, and then he calls his aides to help him stand up, and he stands up. And he walks to his office. Now, let me stop here. If you see me fall today, I will lay there until everybody else leaves. Because I don't want to make eye contact with you people. I would be that riddled with just mockery and shame and everything else. Here's this dude. He knows he can't walk. He's going to walk anyway. And then when he hits the floor, flat of his back, somewhere he finds the courage to take that cane, plant it, rights himself up, gets his aides around him, and walks on. Where did that come from? 3 days after being diagnosed with polio, 3 days after losing his legs, Roosevelt is known for saying these words, "I will not let this disease defeat me." If he'd have laid on that floor, guess what he would have done? The disease would have defeated him. Ladies and gentlemen, you're going to find something in your life that's going to knock you down flat of your back. Maybe it already has. Maybe that's where you are today. My word of encouragement to you is this: get up. Get your cane planted. Write yourself up. Get your team around you and let them escort you back to your office and then have a plan to change the world. That's what that man did. That's what you can do. When life knocks you down, you've got to get back up. Some of you have been around as long as I have, a little bit longer. And here's the truth. Life's going to knock you down. Can I get an amen? Amen. Unless you live in a different world than I've been. Stuff happens. Finally, next one. This is a personal illustration. This is a restaurant in Fredericksburg, Virginia. We have a radio station there. And this is a restaurant 10 minutes from the radio station. It's called Foodie. And they have great fried chicken. Everywhere I go, I try fried chicken. They have great fried chicken here. In the 1860s, it was a bank. You can go in Foodie and you can have your lunch or dinner in the vault. They've never shut us in there, but you can have your, the door still works. And you can have your lunch or dinner in the vault. Why I like this building so much, why I like to go there, is here on the side of the building, there's a set of steps right there. Next slide. President Abraham Lincoln gave a speech from that set of steps. Next slide. Me and the Vice President of Programming, Frankie Murray, went there, and I stood where Abraham Lincoln stood. I was nerding out. I was like, oh, I'm standing where Lincoln stood. This is awesome. You want to live a life of impact? Here's the fourth and final point. Live a life that is so inspiring that people will want to come where you once stood. That people will want to come and stand where you once stood. Did you know that people today will go to the pulpit of Charles Spurgeon and just stand behind it because they're inspired by him? Did you know that today you could fly out to California and visit Apple and go to the headquarters of Steve Jobs and visit his office? They have not changed his office since the day he died. And you can visit that office, and every day thousands of people do. Why? Because they're inspired by him. You can go down to Atlanta, Georgia, and visit the offices of Truett Cathy. Anybody know who that is? Chick-fil-A. Hallelujah. Chick-fil-A. I've been on that tour. He owns the Batmobile. He owns all these different cars and everything like that, and they're right there outside of his office. And his office has not changed since the day he died. It's amazing. It's incredible. Do you know whose offices I have never visited? The offices of a quitter. You know who's, and matter of fact, I'm thinking they've never built a monument to a quitter. As a matter of fact, I don't know that we respect or hold people up as examples who quit. Think about that. I don't know where you are in your life. I don't know what you're facing. I have this question. Because I didn't quit, because of the life that I lived, why will people want to come and stand where I once stood? What will you do with your life? Well, I'm just a mortgage lender. Just a mortgage lender? How many people are you helping to get into a home? That's a noble profession, in my personal opinion. Well, I'm just in construction. Really? Thank you. Me and my wife live in a home built by construction. Thank you. Don't quit. You've got to keep going. As a matter of fact, here's a little secret. Do you know that your team watches every single thing that you do? And if they see you quit, they'll quit. They'll never accomplish a single thing. Last slide. Back to 1862 and Abraham Lincoln. Abraham and Mary Todd had a social engagement that evening. in the downstairs White House in the East Room. They were obligated to attend. So the doctor came by, and he stayed with Willie upstairs. Mary Todd kept eyeing the hallway at this social engagement. That evening, she finally looked at the hallway, and she saw the doctor come around the door. She instantly began to run out of the East Room. Lincoln followed her. Before Lincoln reached the top of the stairs, he could hear the screams from Mary Todd. Lincoln entered the bedroom. Mary Todd had left it. She'd gone to her bedroom. When Lincoln walked over, Willie was dead. History tells us that Lincoln looked down at his 11-year-old son and said, "My boy, so beautiful, he is now with the angels." Mary Todd didn't leave her bed for 2.5 weeks, screaming, wailing, crying. His son had just died within an hour. Lincoln got called downstairs to a meeting about the war. Amazing how life doesn't stop in its worst moments, doesn't it? As he's walking from upstairs downstairs, he's walking down the stairs, he meets a politician from Ohio. Take that for what it's worth. The politician says, "Mr. President, I'd like to talk to you about a job." Lincoln looks at him right in the eye and says, "My God, man, my son just died. Give me a week." "But, sir," Lincoln said, "there is no but." Here's one little last leadership lesson. As a leader, you do not control what problem rolls up on your doorstep or when it rolls up on your doorstep. You ever learned that lesson? Lincoln had just lost his son. And here's this guy wanting a job. It took the bullet of an assassin to stop Abraham Lincoln. He won the war. He freed a people. The nation did come back together. Winston Churchill defeated Hitler, kept Britain free. Ulysses S. Grant won the war, became president of the United States. FDR helped beat Japan, helped beat Germany, got us out of the Great Depression. Men riddled with imperfection, riddled with it. All of your heroes have clay feet, as do you, and you can still accomplish great things. My friends, do not quit. Endure, because your dream and what you were built to do is so much worth it. Thank you for your time. Let me introduce my team to you that travels with me. This is Jerry Grimes, Vice President of Creative Services for PAR, and that's John Long back there, editor at large for our blog, Dear Christian Radio. So thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you. We're going to do some questions and answers. And you know, Brian, we've done this a few times.
We got five minutes, and then I want to let these people go.
But all right, we'll take about 5 minutes to do that. And we've done this a few times, so we've noticed that we get a lot of the same questions. So we're going to start with a couple of the common ones. Brian, you know, what really was the inspiration for writing this book? Why did you do it?
Because I wanted to quit. I'm in radio. I have a speech defect. I have to do fundraising. I have to talk to people. I wanted to quit. I wanted to give up. This is God, why? And I actually said this just a few weeks ago in front of a very large group of about 70 people. And my wife was in the room. And I put my head down and I said, "God, why did you make me like this?" And my wife came to me after I got done speaking. She says, "Brian Jack Sanders, if I ever hear those words from your lips again," she says, "God made you to be who you are. You walk in that purpose, and He will give you grace, He will give you mercy, and yet He will give you purpose. Don't ever, ever say, 'God, why did you make me like this?'" He will give you. And so I wrote the book for me. And then what I've discovered is that for entrepreneurs and pastors and folks who have ideas, it isn't the starting that's hard. It's the keeping going. Uh-huh. because you realize that people are crazy. Mm-hmm. And you got to hire people who are crazy. And you got customers who are crazy. You got people who call you who are crazy. And you're like, why did I get in this business in the first place? Have you ever been there? Or am I just talking to the wind here? You're like, well, I don't want to really admit it because there's people here that I know. I mean, there's that. So that's why I wrote the book.
And what are one or two things that you've learned along the way? I know you learned a lot.
People are crazy.
Crazy. Yeah, all right.
What have I learned along the way? It'll rip your heart out. I wrote the book over the course of a year, about a page and a half a day. Had about 600, 700 pages. There is no worse day. Well, there are worse days. It's a horrible day when you stand there and you watch an editor take half your book and throw it in the trash. That's a day when you really want to sin in a bad way.
Yeah.
Like prison's an option. You know what I'm saying?
And last question we get a lot is, what's next for you as far as your writing career goes? What are some things you've got in tap?
My mom and dad lived in Coushatta, Louisiana, right up the road from here. We lost dad about 18 months ago to cancer. And so the next book are 50 Things I Learned from Dad. And that'll come out this Christmas. The following year, 2021, will be Leadership Encouragement, 100 Stories for the Weary Leader. And those are stories. Did you know that George Lucas almost gave up on Star Wars? Jim Henson almost gave up on the Muppets. And these are, I mean, and we take these things for granted. This is crazy. And my wife and I, we love Disney. So when we went to Disney, there's a place there called the Brown Derby. It's a restaurant. And I knew the story, and I asked the waiter, could you take me to the room where Lucas sold Star Wars to Disney for $4 billion. The waiter said, sure. He walked me to a side room, took me to the exact table, exact chair where Lucas, and I sat in that chair just to see what it might feel like to sign a deal for $4 billion. But I left there with the same $150 in my pocket as I went in with. So
there you go. Well, we got time for one or two more questions from you all. Anybody got a question for Brian? Okay, yes, ma'am. I'm coming over there. Hang on.
Yes,
it is,
ma'am.
Brian's first book. Yep.
Yes, okay. Ma'am. That's my first book. Unless there's somebody who's been impersonating me.
We did find out there are a lot of Brian Sanders out there,
didn't we?
Okay, great. Well, I want to tell you about a couple of things we've got for you before you leave today. We have some free bookmarks. There's one for each of the leaders on the cover of the book. You can take all four, and it's a great way to just remind yourself to be encouraged. After you read the book and you hear some of their stories, when you see their faces, you'll remember those, and it's a great way to stay encouraged. We also have some awesome quote cards with quotes from the book, and that's a great way to stay encouraged. You can take those, tape them up on your bathroom mirror in the morning, and it's a good way to get started on a rough day, and we'd like to give those to you, and you can take those with you, give them to your kids, give them to people that you know that need, they may be going through something. And of course, you can pick up your copies of Leadership Endurance. You're given one today by the church, and they're very glad to do that. But they're available today. If you want to buy 10 or more, we'll sell them to you for $10 a piece. If you'd like to take home a couple of them, they're normally $15. We'll let you have those for $12.50. So please stop by. John's going to help you out with that. Before we get going, too, the other thing we're going to do is take that table that Brian's behind and put it down here so he can sign everybody's book for you before you leave. Brian?
Whenever I'm in an audience like this, I always tell one last story, and you'll understand why. As I told you, anybody could walk in the White House in 1862. Anybody. Outside of Lincoln's office, which was, by the way, on the second floor, there was a little room next to it, which was called the ante room, just where he went to relax. And he was in there making tea. Lincoln had two secretaries. One was named John Nicolay. One was named John Hay. Well, he's in there making tea, and he hears a baby crying. He says, Nicolay, is there a baby in the White House? He said, yes, sir. There's a woman out here in the hallway, and she's been out here for 3 days wanting to see you about a pardon for her husband. He left the Union Army, and he's set to be executed next week. Well, this baby just keeps screaming. So Lincoln puts down his teacup, walks out in the hallway, and he never looks at the woman. He just looks at the baby. and she's holding the baby like this, and the baby just screams and screams and screams. And the whole time the baby's screaming, she's saying, "Mr. President, I need a pardon. My husband is going to be shot next week. He has left the Union Army. Please, sir, if he dies, we have nothing to support us. Please." And the baby just keeps screaming, and he just looks at the baby. She says, "Sir, my husband's name is this, this, and this. Please, sir, help us." Lincoln walks away, walks in his office, takes a quill, dips it in ink, comes back out, writes out a pardon. Brings it back, hands it to her, and just looks at the baby. She takes that pardon, runs downstairs. As she's running away from him, she says, "I did it, I did it, I did it, I did it." Nicolay hears this. He starts running after the lady. She is running down the stairs with the baby. She gets on the bottom floor, and she's running out the door. Nicolay catches her, grabs her by the arm, turns around, says, "Madam, you did nothing. The baby did everything." Ladies and gentlemen, you're in need of a pardon. And no president can give you that pardon. But the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords can. And a baby born in Bethlehem can give you that pardon. Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, the baby did it all. Thank you for your time.